You're listening to Gerby's Law on 790 KABC, the intersection of law and virtue. Want an absolute opinion on something completely relative? Alan Gerby is the judge and jury. Keep it here on 790 KABC.
We're back. You're listening to Gerby's Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC. And I'm Alan Gerby. And I am so privileged to have with me our first guest today, Terry Chaney. Terry, first of all, thanks for coming into the studio to talk with us.
I'm very happy to be here, Alan. Thank you for asking.
You know, I read your book, Manic, and I was just taken aback. I couldn't believe your voice, how you were able to bring the reader into the bipolar disorder ups and downs that you've experienced your whole life.
Well, that's great to hear because that was the goal of my writing Manic. I really wanted to give the reader a visceral sense of what it's like to be bipolar, to be, with the whole roller coaster ride of it.
Now, in Manic, you write, "As a lawyer, I was trained to keep my feelings under wraps." But you also write, "I was a lawyer, a manic lawyer, and there is no scarier beast on earth." So from your experiences as an entertainment lawyer, how do those two statements reconcile?
Well, certainly as a lawyer, you want to be very poised and always in control of yourself. But bipolar disorder doesn't really allow that. I mean, your emotions are so strong so that when you get manic, everything comes pouring out that you otherwise would keep under wraps. So it's a scary position to be in.
Now, you were representing people like Michael Jackson and Quincy Jones. Was that a dream come true for you?
I was so thrilled. That was a big perk to be able to meet celebrities like that. And it was very exciting, yes.
Now, in the book Manic, your experiences jump around from the ups, the downs, and there's no chronological order. I think you once said that you wrote in terms of moods.
Correct.
Kind of a non-linear approach. What do you mean by that, and why did you write that way?
Well, I don't see the world in terms of time. I see it in terms of mood. What mood was I in last summer? Was I manic, hypomanic, depressed? These are the various states you can be in bipolar disorder. And those are the memories that stay with me, the mood memories.
So when you look back, do you look back at experiences and not think about what time period it was for you?
That's right. That's exactly right.
You know, in the preface, you wrote, "The disease thrives on shame, and shame thrives on silence. I've been silent long enough." It really takes courage to do what you've done. Basically, you were a top student, went to Vassar, you went to UCLA Law School, and then you brought to the public this inner voice. What about the shame? What about the feelings of guilt or embarrassment? How did you deal with that?
Well, I was quite frightened about coming out of the closet, so to speak. I actually, the night before Manic came out, I almost called my publisher and told her, please, let's stop the presses. But I started writing Manic when I was in the hospital at UCLA for severe depression. And I looked around me and saw that nobody was getting better because they couldn't express what was going on with them to their doctors. And I thought there really has to be a book out there that talks about the internal experience of manic depression, or bipolar disorder as it's known. And that's what got me to start writing Manic, and it became very therapeutic. I didn't realize I was writing a book until 7 years later when it became a bestseller.
You know, you talk about dealing with other patients in the hospital. Do you think that that's an obstacle that people have, that they're not acknowledging the disorder and perhaps they're not allowing themselves to get better because of the shame or the embarrassment?
I definitely think people acknowledge their disorder. They just don't have the words. They don't have the vocabulary to express, again, what is going on with me. And, you know, it's necessary for us to have open dialogue about the illness so that terms like mania, terms like hypomania can become commonplace and we know what to call it when it happens.
Do you think that perhaps the lack of focus for people who are suffering, for instance, depression, causes them not to be able to deal with the situation as well as you have through your experiences?
Lack of focus can be a real detriment when you're depressed. There's no question about it. But I really think, based on the thousands and thousands of emails I've gotten from people after my book came out, that if there was more conversation and more just commonplace use of these words, what it feels like, I think it would be a much different scenario.
Tell me about hypomania. You talk about that quite a bit. And to me, it seems like Alan Gervey every day.
You're a very lucky man then.
Well, yeah. I mean, I need to maybe bring it down a notch. But with respect to what you went through with hypomania, I know you accomplished a lot. Tell me a little bit about how that all went down.
Hypomania is what allowed me to become a very successful entertainment lawyer. It was what allowed me to produce 14 motions in limine instead of one motion in limine.
Wow.
It kept me on top of my game. It's that stage right before mania when you are incredibly charming, productive, energetic, creative, charismatic. You really can do no wrong, and it's by far the best part of being bipolar.
It's strange for you to say the best part of being bipolar, but I think you allude to the fact that when you move on to the mania stage, maybe it's not all going as well as you talk about in the hypomania stage.
Yeah, people always think that, you know, I often get asked, what's mania really like? Like, it's so much fun and exciting. It's not that much fun. It's you're often very irritable, and you have a sense of pressure, and you do reckless things. You get into a great deal of trouble. You spend all your money. You have reckless sex with strangers. It can be devastating to your life.
I think you really portray that very well in Mania, in Manic, rather. You talk about how when you were on those highs, you were with people that you don't even remember their names, and you were doing things that you otherwise would not have done. How do you deal with that after your manic stops?
Well, there's a slight blessing in that you often forget what you did when you were manic. So I remember the worst of it, but I don't necessarily remember how it felt. So, you know, there's some grace to that.
What do you think about in terms of your law career? Do you ever miss it? Or do you feel that you are doing better for society in general than you were as an entertainment litigator?
Well, I'll be honest, I miss the money a great deal. But I am very happy to be a writer. It's what I wanted to do all my life, and certainly one of the reasons I went into the law in the first place. So I'm living my dream.
I have a question.
Sure.
I work with a lot of attorneys, and some of the characteristics you are describing seem to be right on point for a lot of people I know in the industry. Do you think a lot of people go undiagnosed, or they just don't have awareness about this disorder? What do you think's going on?
Well, I think a huge number of people go undiagnosed. Particularly in Hollywood. I think Hollywood is an inherently bipolar town. There's a lot of ups and downs, and a lot of cycling that goes on, and just in terms of the business. But I think that attorneys in particular are very bright, and many bipolar people are very bright and creative and verbal. So there is an overlap, without a question.
Now, I've read that it's usually diagnosed around late high school, early college, within your early 20s. Is that true?
Well, that used to be true, but there's been an increase in childhood bipolar diagnoses. I believe it's gone up 4,000% in the last 10 years.
So do you work with schools or colleges or anything on how to identify it early to kind of reach out to people?
Well, I wrote a book on it called
The Dark Side of Innocence, Growing Up Bipolar.
Correct, yes. That's
another incredible book.
And
there's a big difference between that book and Manic in that you talk about the evolution of the disorder and what you were experiencing as a child.
Correct, yes.
That sounds really good. I feel like people could use that.
you know, Bailey talks about you, you know, helping out in the community. You've done therapeutic workshops. Is that right? What kind of things, other than the therapeutic workshops and you're doing writing, how are you helping others?
Well, I'm on a number of boards of directors. But in addition to that, I do facilitate a mental health support group at UCLA every Tuesday. And I speak all over the country. I just came back from Dubai, in fact. So I speak all over the world, I guess.
Yes.
And
that must have been fascinating.
It was frightening in that they don't allow psychiatric drugs to come into the country. So for me, that was quite a challenge. We had to go through the Ministry of Customs to get through. And it was a big battle.
You know, you bring up an interesting point. I wish we had more time to deal with it, but we'd love to have you come back so you could tell us about your experiences traveling without psychiatric medication.
Sure.
And other things. Now, the book is called Manic. The other book, which is coming from a whole different angle, dealing with children, is called The Dark Side of Innocence, Growing Up Bipolar. Where do you get these books? I use Amazon all the time.
I use Amazon.
Yeah, so it's that's the easiest. Best place to get it. And if anyone wants to have you speak, I know you're an incredible speaker. In fact, you're doing a conference for the legal organization, California Applicants Attorneys Association, in January about lawyers and mental conditions.
They can contact my website at terry@terrycheney.com. That's terri@terrycheney.com.
Last question I have for you, Terry, is on this show we talk about anything that can go wrong can also go right. Can you tell us how you have turned your life into something that has gone right?
I was so terrified to speak out about my illness. I didn't tell anyone until my book came out that I was bipolar, not my friends, my family, my coworkers, no one. I thought I would lose my job, my friends. Anyone who cared about me would just drop me. And the response to Manic has been so phenomenal. Thousands and thousands of emails from all around the world telling me, you know, what a brave thing I did and how courageous it was. And just the response has been pure acceptance and love.
Yeah, I can't tell you enough. Everyone out there, you need to get these books. They really will help you understand the human condition. You're listening to Gervie's Law on Talk Radio 790 KBC. I'm Alan Gervie, and I'm here with Bailey Rad. We'll be back right after this.